Technorama episode 582, Cyber Turkey Day. You didn't know I could make that sound.
I know. I was like, what is he doing? Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. If you're a returning viewer and or watcher, no, listener, viewer and watcher would be the same thing, wouldn't it?
Welcome them all back.
Come That's on okay. back. Yeah, welcome. Yeah. Thank you for joining us and thank you for giving us your time. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, where it is nice and cool and you can go for walks in the afternoon without baking. It's a great time of year. There's no snow, a little bit of rain now and then. Joining me right across from the kitchen table is Craig Stepp. Yeah. How are you, Craig?
Hey, will you pass the yams?
I'm doing good, man.
I'm doing good. I'm ready for Thanksgiving. It's gonna be all good. And as a matter of fact, I think I'll interject here and say I'm thankful for all you that are listening and watching the show and keeping it alive.
Absolutely. Thank you. It's been a lot of fun years and we are still here. Don't plan on going anywhere anytime soon, and greatly, greatly appreciate the people who do listen and comment and tell us how much fun they have.
Well, I'm thankful up until the point they don't call in on International Technorama voicemail.
Hey, we had a few. Should we do that?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Should we do that?
Let's go there.
Nice segue, Craig. Violent, but not.
letters. Oh, we get letters.
Flanders.
We get your letters.
Hey, this has got turkey in it.
Someone mailed me mashed potatoes and gravy.
Yeah. Oh
boy!
Mailman, mail today.
We have not one, not two, but three voicemails for you. So let us play those. This is from Brian in Minnesota.
Hi, Chuck and Craig. This is Brian from Minnesota. I have a question. What happened to the encaffeinated one?
Wait, I'm going to try to hit pause. What happened to the encaffeinated one? He's still around in New Brunswick. If you listen to the Dog Days of Podcasting, he was doing My New Brunswick, a nice series that he had every day during the month of August. He's still around. Your next question, what happened to the weird show? That's a better question probably asked of Mark the Encaffeinated One, who is also a listener, and maybe he'll call in and let us know what his plans are for that show. So,
hey, by the way, if you want to hear him, you can go back and listen to the Dog Days of Podcasting. He participated in that, and he has signed up for the Dog Days of Advent.
And where can you find those podcasts, Craig?
At the dogdaysofpodcasting.com.
And there'll be a mega feed with all of them?
Yeah, so if you go to the website, there's a big feed right on the front you can subscribe to, and you can listen to all the shows that are participating. And of course, I'll have links on the Dog Days of Podcasting to everybody that is participating as well.
I wish I had.
Will you be one of those people?
I wish I had reverb. The big feed.
The Mongo feed. Will you be one of those people, Chuck?
I am going to try, but I have a lot of travel coming up the first 2 weeks of December, so it's going to be mega difficult. So I might have to make an abbreviated version.
I want to hear some more about the chimney cookies.
I didn't tell you what happened.
I think you did. That's why I want to hear more.
Okay. Well,
yeah, save it.
I was in the house last month.
Save it.
Okay. I'm going to leave it at that. Chimney cookies is last year's theme. It wasn't this year's theme.
I know, but I'm just saying you can bring it up and tell everybody.
Some of our listeners are going, what? Chimney cookies.
I brought that up to Kim and she was like, hey, what?
Did you show her the picture of what's in there this year?
I don't think I had your picture. I don't think you showed me a picture.
Oh, the most recent update. This is better than, okay, we'll go on. let's continue on.
What happened to winging it?
Kind of, I think that was when Evo left. That might have been a little winging it after. That went away a long, long time ago. Definitely, around 2009 time frame. What happened to it? Well, Michael and Evo had a falling out around 2007. I believe it was late 2007. And maybe it was early 2008. I forget the exact date. But, its time had
Everybody
come
just
and
kind
gone.
Of parted ways and it went away. Yeah.
And it was on such high octane. It burned bright and burned quickly.
Well, yeah, and that was, yes, of course, that's pretty much right.
Like a big blue star in the sky went supernova. Let's find out what else is there.
Please ask. Love the show.
Thank you.
Love you guys a lot.
Thank you.
Can't wait to listen every week.
Thank you.
And 101.
101.
Hi.
You know, we should use that in our show somewhere.
That'd be a great idea.
That's a great idea.
But check out the Dog Days of Podcasting. You'll hear Mark's, silky, deep voice coming through the podcast.
You bet. All right. Our second one is from Unknown.
If I had the power to rewind time, I would go back and save my best friend by letting a weird freak storm destroy my hometown.
I'm a little confused on that one. He's going to save his friend by letting a storm hit his town. Okay.
Sacrificing his own town?
Maybe. So we feel for you if you lost a friend a long time ago. We still aren't sure if that question of the week you could actually rewind time or if you could change events or just witness them, you could get to make up the rules because it was an open-ended question just for fun. Yeah. Our final one is from none other than...
Yeah, the same to you, buddy.
Whoa!
Yes, sir, this is John Miller Jr. Sorry about that. It was just somebody that decided they wanted to rev their engine as I was recording here.
Welcome to podcasting.
Nothing snarky, nothing weird. Just want to say happy Thanksgiving and happy holidays to everybody.
Thank you.
Enjoy yourselves. Listen to the show. Hashtag notice me.
Yes! Happy Thanksgiving to you, too. And thank you very much for calling in with the well wishes. We have our question of the week. Without naming the movie, what's one line that would give it away? Craig, do you want to...
That was last time's question of the week.
Okay. I don't know who answered what for your answers, so I'm going to give you a character voice, and you have to read a random answer in that voice, okay? No. No, I'll give you an answer off of my list, and you use a character voice. How's that?
How are we going to do that? Okay.
How are we going to do that? Let's see. Maybe you should just pick a voice and do your own list. This is too hard. You go through your list. I'll go through mine.
I'm going to do all of them. I'll pick three or four,
okay.
And I'm going to do them in Bullwinkle's voice.
Okay, like... No, you messed up. It's like, it's kind of like the multi faces of Darth Vader. You're going to have like Johnny Cash as Bullwinkle.
Yeah, that's right. All right. Okay, here's a good one. All right, I'm not giving away the movie. I may try and guess the movies afterwards. I don't know.
Okay.
Ready?
I can't believe somebody threw away a perfectly good white boy.
A whiteboard?
White boy.
Well, oh,
boy. all right.
What was that from? I'm so on the tip of my tongue.
It was Sheen, Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez working. Crap.
Okay.
It's on top of my tongue, too. Anyway.
All right.
I'm picking next another one.
This one will be done in the style of Yoda as Bullwinkle.
Which one?
Go ahead. You pick one.
Oh, okay. I was waiting for you to say something at first. I gotcha.
All the Bullwinkles are yours.
Yeah, there's so many good ones. I'm trying to get a couple that are a little bit obscure. Now, here's one that's easy.
Aren't you a little short for a stormtrooper?
Oh, I know that one.
Star Trek 3.
No. No. Holy Grail.
Oh, here's a really good one right here.
Gentlemen, you can't fight in here. This is a war room.
Do another one.
All right.
I can hear them laughing so hard they're going to drive off the road. Please pull off the road if you listen to Technorama.
I should have just highlighted a few of them before we did this.
You're killing me, Smalls. I've got a bad feeling about this.
Oh, I know that one. Don't tell me. Fahrenheit 451.
Yes, that's exactly right. Anyway, that's about it. Okay, I did three or four, so there you go.
Okay.
Wait a minute. Here's one more.
Inconceivable.
Hey, that's there. On mine, too.
Okay.
Only mine is written by my wife, so it sounds more like, oh, Kermy, it's inconceivable.
I can't get my voice up that high anymore.
That's why I do the falsetto songs.
Yeah.
Okay. This is just priceless. Raz Yalov writes this one, and I'm doing it as Boris Badenov. Show me the money. That wasn't my best Boris, but
what did you say?
Ryan Churchill writes this one. Let's see if I can do this as Elvis. Don't sell yourself short, Judge. You're a tremendous slouch. hey, I got a You're Killing Me Smalls,
too. That was wonderful, Chuck.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you. Here's one from T Monster. We'll do this as Cookie Monster.
Yeah, perfect.
Merry Christmas, Bedford Falls.
That's funny.
Couldn't resist. Let's try one more as let's see. I'm trying to get one that's recognizable by both of us.
Following that one up. Did I do the It's a Wonderful Life one?
You see, George, you really did have a wonderful life.
There you go.
Oh, every time a bell rings, an angel gets its wings. Whoa.
Yeah, I think you've been drinking too much in the Matrix.
How about
baby in the corner, nobody puts.
Yoda baby in the corner, nobody puts.
All right, we have hundreds
more. I got one more on your
list. Okay.
One more.
Stupid is as stupid does.
There you go.
Do that one as Yoda.
Stupid does as stupid is.
Yes. I was trying to read it backwards. That's right. All right. That's it.
Get to the chopper.
So we had fun with that. I hope you did too. This was a fun insight into different people's minds as to which movies came out from which personalities and where they fit in our life, because there are many slices of career and podcasting and hobbies going through these. Just watching some of the people from work was fun. Oh boy, I tell you. A lot of fun. Good question last week, Craig. I'm sure we'll get more of those in the upcoming days as these things have a life of their own.
They do. I think they're a lot of fun. I'm finding some good questions here and there, and we're getting some reactions. So, hey,
thank you.
You can always call us in. Call in with your answer.
Well, if you're watching the video, it's right there below my face. Contact us on the listener line, 707-530-2428. We'd love to hear from you. It's still November, so technically it's still International Call Technorama Month. You can do that.
Yes.
But we are going to close out our feedback. On with more of the show. We didn't do one.
Do we need to roll for the history?
Shatner. There's only two of us. No. If you're going to roll,
I'm the one. You're the zero.
We'll work on that. I got to first find the music. There we go. On this day in history for November 27, 2019, this is the 331st day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. That means there are 34 days remaining in 2019. It was on this date in 1839 that in Boston, Massachusetts, the American Statistical Association is founded. They would have known that it was the 331st day of the year, right?
Sure. Absolutely, okay. They would have known. In that same date in 1895, at the Swedish-Norwegian Club in Paris, Alfred Nobel...
the Swedish-Norwegian Club in Paris? What language do they speak?
They need to add another country in there somehow. Swedish-Norwegian Club in Paris, Alfred Nobel signed his last will and testament, setting aside his estate to establish the Nobel Prize after he dies.
And what did he invent? What was he known for?
Dynamite.
That's right. Dynamite. It was on this date.
His business was exploding.
I'm TNT. I'm dynamite. It was on this date in 1924 that New York City, the first Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade is held. 1924. That means it's 95 years old this year.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. Wow. And 48 years ago today, the Soviet space program's Mars 2 orbiter releases a descent module. It malfunctions and crashes, but it is the first man-made object to reach the surface of Mars. And, of course, gravity-assisted landing.
That's a little obvious. It was a gravity-assisted landing. It was also 18 years ago today that a hydrogen atmosphere is discovered on an extrasolar planet, OSIRIS, by the Hubble telescope, the first atmosphere detected on an extrasolar planet. Woohoo! Happy birthday goes out on this date to American businessman Cornelius Vanderbilt. Let me do that right. Cornelius Vanderbilt II. He was born on this date in 1843.
And also Charles Scott Sherrington, the English psychologist.
Physiologist.
Bacteriologist and pathologist. Nobel Prize laureate, and lucky for him, we saw Alfred Nobel was
sign
born 162
here, quick,
years
Al.
Ago. Yeah, that's right. He was born 162 years ago today.
Born November 27th, 1871, Italian physicist and engineer Giovanni Giorgi.
And Japanese businessman founded Japanese... I'm sorry, I was looking for the name first. Japanese businessman founded Panasonic, Kensuke Matsushita. Was born on this date in 1894.
Lars Onsager, the Norwegian-American chemist and physicist, Nobel Prize, another Nobel Prize for these guys. He was born 116 years ago today. I have no idea what accent this is.
I'm not going to try a Russian accent, but Russian mathematician and theorist Anatoly Maltsev.
Is he the one that made the cocktails?
Yeah, you don't want to drink those flambe kind of thing. Anyway, it was born 110 years ago today.
American actor and television host Buffalo Bob Smith, born on this date in 1917. You're next. Craig? He's just smiling at me. Can you hear? I think I'm going to... He lost his audio. Eddie Rabbit, the American singer-songwriter and guitarist, was born 78 years ago today. Continuing on, let's do this one as Chuck.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah?
Yeah, where'd you... after Eddie Rabbit?
Yeah.
American singer-songwriter, guitarist, producer, Jimi Hendrix, was born on this date in 1942.
Also born
I'm going to tell you...
Yeah.
Yeah, I lost you there for a minute.
On that same date in 1955, American engineer, educator, and television host Bill Nye, the bow tie science guy.
That's right. And also turning 62 today as American game designer and author Michael A. Stackpole.
Friend of, the show that used to be in this studio.
Yeah.
Happy birthday to our wonderful listeners goes out November 27th. Brad P. from NJ. Who was born in VA, but has moved back there. Okay.
Yes.
And on the 28th, co-worker and friend of the show, Ben Sweetser. December 1st, Claudio Miranda, longtime listener. I think he's probably one of the first names on this calendar. And December 2nd, Ben Frixell from the Mac Mania podcast. Hope it's still out there. We're giving away false advertising. So go
you know
ahead
what?
And give
a lot of podcasts have expired that are on our birthday.
This is
but that's
now
okay.
The podcast museum calendar.
The Death Watch.
And that's the way it was on this day in history for November 27th, 2019. We'll let him go. Thanks, band. Come back later. If you want to get your name on the birthday calendar, all you have to do is go over to chuckchat.com/wiki and add your name. We'll give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. If it's your birthday and you're not on the calendar, we wish you all the best. Happy birthday, happy Thanksgiving, and happy Black Friday.
Happy Thursday.
And Cyber Monday and Small Business Saturday and whatever else comes this week. We wish you just have a happy day. You'll do us all a favor.
And we'll say a little prayer for your wallets.
And your e-bank account, your credit card.
Yeah, that's right.
Because nobody's using their wallet online anyway. Okay, we have, I'm going to call this as good news.
Aren't you going to say good news, everyone?
Oh, I just said that for Fry's benefit.
All right. Would you like the first story, Craig?
Yes, because I think this is kind of cool. Artificial retina that could help restore sight to the blind. For more than a decade, researchers have been working to create artificial digital retinas that can be implanted in the eye to allow the blind to see again. Many challenges stand in their way, but researchers at Stanford University may have found the key to solving one of the most vexing, heat.
Okay.
The artificial retina requires a small computer chip with many electrodes poking out. And of course, just like your computer, it's going to get a little warm. The electrodes first recorded activity of the neuron around the, did I skip ahead? I did. The electrodes first record the activity of the neurons around them to create a map of the cell types. This information is used to transmit visual data from the camera to the brain. Ultimately, the eye produces so much data during the recording that the electronics get too darn hot. So the chips required to build a high-quality artificial retina would essentially fry the human tissue they are trying to interface with, which is not a good situation there. So members of the team, including E.J. Chelinsky and his collaborator.
Okay, yeah, we'll go with that.
Chelinsky. Yeah, anyway. I was like, it's like chinchilla. Chinchilinsky was and his collaborators at Stanford Electrical Engineering and Computer Science Departments recently announced that they have devised a way to solve the problem by significantly compressing the massive amounts of visual data that all the neurons in the eye create. They discussed their advance in a study published in the IEEE Transactions of Biomedical Circuits and Systems.
Data compression.
So they're going to put WinZip in there.
I'm just thinking of that song by, I can't remember the artist. It just escaped me.
About data compression?
No, about the chip getting hot
song.
In your eye. Yeah.
How far did that get
burns
up on the charts,
in the
chart
back
there,
of my
Chuck?
Retina.
How far did that get up on the charts, Chuck?
Okay. Anyway, that joke was lost.
Anyway, I remember obviously hearing about, in the future we'll have, people will be able to see because they'll put cameras in there. And we've seen a lot of different types of things on people's faces to help them see. So I think this is pretty cool, especially if they can get the heat down, because that would be a big problem.
Rob Zombie, that's what I was thinking of. Sorry.
Rob Zombie. Oh.
I was modifying Dragula.
Oh. So I think it's very cool to be able to do that. But what kind of scares me though is, it's data.
Yes.
And you could, just like a camera, you could take a picture.
Someone could hack your eye.
Yeah. I wonder if, you could be on Wi-Fi and snap a picture and go right on Facebook.
It'd be like Google Glass in your eye.
Yeah.
No.
Well, you know what? think about this though. If you had that in your eye and it was collecting data and making an image and sending it to your brain.
Yes.
What's keeping it? What's keeping them from being able to transmit data from your phone via Bluetooth or whatever to it?
You could, but then it'd be like having your eye outside of your body. That'd be kind of weird.
No, no, not for imaging. It's like text, you know, or information.
Here, read this QR code. Hey, I'm like Jordy LaForge.
Just it would be just like you know, Google Glass, like you mentioned. I was like, I don't know. Just thinking outside the box. That's what I am. I'm an idea man. So
idea. All right, moving on with that bad joke. Moving on to our next story from Forbes. Google's internet air balloon service, Loon, is moving beyond Africa and into the Amazon rainforest. The company announced it's bringing internet to the areas of Peru where around 200,000 people live, thanks to its agreement with Internet para Todos Peru, the IPT, an open access infrastructure operator. Connecting remote parts of Africa and the Amazon could mean big business for the search giant. The breakdown you need to know. Culture Banks noted that every new person they're able to connect to the internet has a possibility to turn into a paying customer. Currently, a quarter of the people in the Amazon rainforest lack 3G internet access, and IPT wants to connect 6 million rural Peruvians by 2021, which is why this deal makes sense. However, this isn't Loon's first trip to the region. While still under Alphabet X department, the research lab of the company, once called Project Loon, which just sounds like a crazy idea to me, it was deployed twice after natural disasters to affected areas. The first live feed test came in May 2017 after devastating floods in Lima, Peru. Loon was able to provide post-disaster cell service to an estimated 25,000 square miles, according to the BBC. The balloons were subsequently also deployed in November 2017 after Hurricane Maria ravaged Puerto Rico and helped return service to nearly 250,000 residents. So you can read more by going to our show notes over at chuckchat.com/technorama, episode 582. Ding. There it is.
And, you know, I was wondering how SpaceX's Starlink would affect this project.
Well, wasn't
because this project was
Facebook looking at doing something similar too?
I forget what they were trying to do. But yeah, they were doing something slight, not with balloons, but something else. But, you know, provide internet with balloons and stuff. How isn't that what Starlink is trying to do with high level low orbit satellites?
Ubiquitous networking. Wouldn't that be nice?
It's, well, if only it's we almost can get there.
Our upload speeds better around here.
Actually, SpaceX was, they were talking about they've cut the latency down a lot because that was one of the big hurdles that they were having to overcome because, like DirecTV and I don't know what the stat is on satellite internet now, but they were, SpaceX said that was one of the big hurdles they had to overcome to really tighten that up. So, and yeah, you know how they're doing that is with a network, not only of the satellites, but they're a network of ground-based antennas that will also be part of the service. So, upload will be like terrestrial and download will be, I may have got backwards, but you get the idea.
So there's going to be a whole bunch of antennas in the Amazon trees and then the monkeys will pull them apart.
It's like some of those obviously fake trees sitting in the Amazon metal. None of the animals or nothing's touching it, and there's no vines on it. Just
put some artificial animals up there.
You know, you ever see some of those?
I know. We have them around here. Disgusting looking funny. Palm trees. Yeah.
Yeah. What's funny? I look at them like, you know, it's like you know,
because somebody didn't want to.
I belong here.
it's because somebody doesn't want to look at a big steel antenna in their neighborhood.
Well, I mean, I remember when we were in Vegas for the podcast expo and we were on the monorail. I remember looking out the window and seeing palm tree. Well, that wasn't a palm tree. You know, it took me a minute to go, what was that? Because it looked like one sort of, but it wasn't.
Spruce tree.
And then I've seen, I forget where, I know where it's at. Here in my area, there's like all the trees are like probably 10 feet below this one, or maybe more.
It's like, yeah, they stand out.
I guess they built it. I think they built it to anticipate growth of the trees.
No.
It's like way up here.
No, it's just so they don't have to, the trees don't get in the way when they're servicing it, probably. Anyway, we have another story, space-related story. Would you like to read that one?
Space? Yes, let me pull it up, because I should have done that before.
From Live Science.
Live Science. There's a violent battle between solar wind and cosmic rays, and Voyager 2 just passed through it.
Dun, 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 like butter.
So anyway, solar wind is not exactly our friend. The flood of hot electric particles constantly gushing out of the sun bathes the solar system in radiation, frying the occasional satellite and making life impossible on any planet that's not shielded by an atmosphere. In both a literal and figurative sense, the solar wind blows.
This blows, man.
I'm sorry, that's funny. But this new observations from the edge of our solar system suggests that it only protects everything it touches from even more damaging forces of interstellar space.
Okay.
So the solar wind flows outward for billions of miles in every direction.
Yes.
It creates a bubble of energy, like a warp bubble, a bubble of energy that surrounds our entire solar system. At the edges of this bubble, there are where their solar wind finally collides with the powerful cosmic rays beaming through interstellar space, there is a hot, thick wall of plasma called the heliopause.
Right.
And the cosmic border sits about 120 times further from the sun than the Earth does, where it helps deflect and dilute the powerful radiation released by distant stars and celestial explosions.
Didn't Voyager 2 go through the heliopause like 5 years ago?
Voyager 1 did.
Okay, I thought Voyager 2 was further out because of the trajectories they were on.
I was trying to figure out which one was further, but yeah, you...
November 2018.
Yeah, November 19... There you go. In November 2018, NASA's Voyager 2 satellite passed through the heliopause, becoming the second man-made object in history to leave our solar system.
Okay, Voyager 1.
The satellite's twin, Voyager 1.
Yep.
That's what I thought. Okay.
In 2012.
Because they'd be stupid to call that one 1 and this one 2. No.
Not necessarily, because they took different paths.
They did take pretty different paths, yes.
Okay.
But anyway. I think this is pretty cool that we got a couple of objects floating past and they're still sending data back.
At like 4 bits a second.
Yeah, 4 baud.
It's pretty dang slow, but it still works. There is a sensor malfunction on Voyager 1, but Voyager 2 is going on. That's pretty amazing. Well, this technology is now, 40 years old or something? And it's still
working.
Hopping along. Pretty cool.
We have to send a repair guy out for that sensor.
Here, I got a punch card software upgrade for you. They didn't have over-the-air software firmware upgrades back then.
Can you imagine me and the service guy getting that ticket? Oh, dang it. I got to fly all the way out there.
Think of the airline miles.
Yeah. I'll fly for free the rest of my life.
It's only going to take you 40 years to get there. Oh, and you have to catch up with it, too.
It will take you the rest of your life to go out and service this thing. Sorry.
Multi-generational service call.
Yeah.
All right. Our last news story is scientists have found a fifth force of nature. It's not Lilu. Researchers claim to have...
Hey, it's called marriage.
Multipass. Scientists claim they have observed a fifth force of nature that could transform our understanding of how the universe works. Researchers at the Hungarian Academy of Sciences have revealed results that could show it in action. They saw an excited decaying helium atom emit light when the particles split in a strange way that could not be explained by the current understanding of physics. It was the second time lead scientist Attila oh boy, Krasnohorke and his team had seen the new particle they call X17. We found its mass to be 17 mega electron volts. Mr. Krasnohorke told CNN, X17 could be a particle which connects our visible world with the dark matter. Here we get a special bell for that. Oh no, you know what you need? We need to get dark matter science, you get the Mario coin.
Like a Bitcoin.
Professor of physics and astronomy at the University of California, Irvine, Jonathan Feng, who had closely watched they're just torturing me with this name. Mr. Krasnohorke's team's efforts said it could be a game changer, and that's in quotes, adding if it could be replicated, this would be a no-brainer Nobel Prize. It comes 3 years after the Hungarian team spotted an anomaly in radioactive decay, suggesting the existence of a new particle. If their tests prove accurate, the discovery could completely upend our understanding of how the universe works. Good, because it's time we all got new textbooks anyway.
Well, I don't think we all understand how it's working already, so go ahead and change it.
Well, let me tell you about the current working model. The current working model of physics states that there are four fundamental forces of nature: gravity, electromagnetism, and the weak and strong nuclear forces, right? So we all learned about that in grade school. The 2016 experiment by Mr. K and his team of physicists suggested there was another force. How could this guy still be a mister? He should be a doctor if he's doing this kind of stuff. The team said at the time that they had found a bizarre radioactive decay irregularity, according to the report by Nature News. They published their results in late 2015 in the prestigious Physical Review Letters. Despite the radical claim, their paper received very little attention, according to the report in Gizmodo. Well, if they have to go to Gizmodo, there's your problem. No, I'm just kidding.
I wouldn't call that a peer review.
That is, until physicists like the University of California checked their method and results and found the study to be accurate. Quote, what it's telling us, if it is correct, is that there is something going on the way that one particle talks to another particle and we haven't got inside our mathematics at the moment. Jerry Lewis, a professor at astrophysics at the University of Sydney, told ABC News, well, they're all over the place with Sydney now.
No kidding.
Scientists have theorized that the fifth force existed for decades. They claim it could help explain the inability of the standard model of particle physics to explain dark matter. Ooh, okay. Dark matter is the invisible substance that makes up more than 80% of the universe's mass. Not the energy, that's dark energy. Okay. Theorists have proposed a number of exotic matter particles, including dark photons that carry electromagnetic force. The Hungarian scientists were looking for dark photons by blasting protons at a thin strip of lithium. As the lithium absorbed the protons, it transformed into an unstable version of beryllium, which decayed even further, creating electrons and positrons. Excuse me.
Getting all choked up there.
When the protons hit against the lithium at 140 degrees, more electrons and positrons were created than were expected. Dun, 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 dun. And there is a cool looking thing that looks like it was made in somebody's kitchen to do all this sciencey stuff. There. Thank you, Donna. So we're getting close, kids. This could be a time to rewrite physics. And we will keep you posted. Well, I'm sure other news sources will first. But hey, remember Hitchbot? You heard it here first. I don't hear any other news sources carrying on news like this. And every once in a while, we are on the leading edge of crazy and whacked out science news. And this is...
Take that, kids.
This is cool. You might just learn something on Technorama. So be careful.
Yeah, be very careful.
We're going to take our first break now that we're 40 minutes into this crazy show. And we will be right back with more stories. Hang on.
Hi. Hi, I'm Nuke Choss, the host of Nutty Bites.
And hi, I'm Tech, Nutty's regular guest.
Or antagonist. Our podcast is like a call-in show where geeks get to debate topics about speculative fiction.
We don't really debate.
Sure we do. We debate topics such as lame superpowers, the best villains, and our favorite apocalypses.
We more like rant, rave, and then have massive nerd rages.
People call in from all over the world, sometimes minor celebrities, and we've even had some supervillains show up.
Do you ever notice that you never have any superheroes or good guys?
I'm a good guy.
Compared to what?
Antagonist. Not really a guest. Nutty Bites. Nimlast.org.
This is David Levy, amateur astronomer, lover of the night sky, and comet discoverer. You are listening to Chuck and Craig on Technorama.
Maybe one of us ought to be the antagonist on this show.
You figure out which one, then.
No, you figure it out.
No, you figure it out.
I do all the work. You figure it out. We can't have two antagonists, so that won't work.
Okay. Hey, I don't do all the work. Oh, wait, that's not what it...
That backfired, man. That was really bad. All right, normally we would give you...
That was like Bugs Bunny going, you know, you do it, I do it, you know. Anyway.
Shoot me now. I say he does have to shoot me now. Okay. Well, normally we would give a shout out to the chat room if we were doing this on a Sunday night, and if we had bandwidth to broadcast to YouTube, but we have neither, and it is not that time. So thank you. If you want to watch, just subscribe to the Technorama podcast page on Facebook, and you'll get a notification when we go live. If and whenever that happens again. So thank you very much for that. And thank you to our wonderful, wonderful patrons. These are the people who donate as little as a dollar a show and as much as more than that for support of this show. That keeps bandwidth and software and hardware and pretty much everything else going without dipping into our personal budgets too deeply. And it is coming time to renew the hosting and domain registration and all that good stuff. Ooh. So thank you, everyone, for that. These people not only get their name enshrined on every episode, but they also get a special podcast recorded immediately following this, which has its own unique flavor and style. And sometimes it's a deep topic, and sometimes it's just the ramblings of a couple of geeks. You never know. Until you subscribe, you can do that over at patreon.com/technorama podcast, just like these wonderful people: Kyle Nishioka, Abner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Mike Wills, Megapodtastic. Thank you, Night Gig Studios, Gary Lindros, and John Clifford. We really appreciate Leon,
yes,
and John Noble.
That way, that Chris MC?
Yes, that's our Chris MC. Alexis, okay. Duran, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Jorga Sharawin, the Postcard Man, John Miller Jr., Amber Elstad, Harold McKinstry, Amy Bowen, Denise Inglis, Stephen Wetchie, Dean Jensen.
Wetchie?
Yes.
Oh, wait, you didn't wait.
Jensen! Dandy Mancoyer. We're all over the place.
Yeah.
Jensen! NCAF 1. Matt Baum, and our newest member, Christina. Like I said, if you want to join them, you can do so over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast, right there on the screen below me and Craig.
Yeah, right down there.
Greatly, greatly appreciate it. That's probably one of our biggest things on the Thanksgiving for the Technorama Thanksgiving show. We are thankful for you. And... that means it's time for what? Media Corner, right? We have a Media Corner.
Yeah. And I'm going to let you take this one because that's near and dear to your heart.
Video. Hey, where can I find some good information about music and TV?
Don't get me
and
started. Things?
Over here in the Media Corner.
We should have done one of those movie quotes as that guy.
Yeah.
The Media Corner. All right. This California town has the slowest... We'll do this so you can get all the bits.
Oh, no.
Slowest internet in the U.S.
I'm gonna set Chuck to times two. There you go.
Drivers cruise by the Interstate 80, a busy artery that cuts across Northern California, never knowing they pass through the town of Newcastle. The unincorporated rural community tucked into the foothills is a half-hour drive from Sacramento, is home to more than 1,200 people, and several fruit orchards. Hailed as the important stop on the newly built Transcontinental Railroad in 1864, the town's reputation was built around its produce production. Newcastle has retained its historic charm, the centuries-old landmarks, narrow country roads that weave through the hillside homes and vintage storefronts are from a different era. But that's not what's most remarkable about this California town, nestled amid bustling tech centers. Even though it's mere hours from Silicon Valley, Newcastle has the slowest internet in the country. It is one of the many rural communities across the nation on the edges of the digital divide that has been growing wider for decades. While most metro areas are adopting the latest innovations in communication technology and setting the standards for connectivity, rural residents are often left with outdated options or are unable to get online in their homes or businesses. Despite Newcastle's proximity to high-speed hubs, the town's speed averages 3.7 megabits per second. That's their download speed, kids. That's what I'm getting upload right now, and I'm mad at it because I can't broadcast with that as an upload speed. So I'm not going to complain anymore about my download speed. That's for Soyton. According to tests done on highspeedinternet.com, a company that offers consumer information on internet service providers, for comparison, average internet speeds are closer to 160 megabits per second, roughly 100 miles south in San Francisco. That's average. Don't think that's the top end. Many people in Newcastle don't even have access to the internet. Nearly 30% of the households in the town don't have a broadband subscription.
Yeah.
According to the
Grandma, get off the phone.
Hang it up. What is that whistling noise? Is someone sending a fax?
I need to call Martha.
I'm calling America Online.
About my bill.
They need to send me a new floppy disk. I used up my 10 hours. 10 hours. It happens, kids. It happens.
It happened. No, it's...
I'm switching to CompuServe. That's it.
Yeah, Prodigy. Where's where it's at? Oh, it sounded like the Negus there for a minute. Didn't it? Prodigy. That's where it's at.
Have you been using my CompuServe account? Is this? Are we almost done? No, there's one more story. Oh, man.
Yeah, it's just real quick.
All right, your turn. Take us home.
All right. So machine learning has revealed exactly how much of Shakespeare plays was written by someone else. Ooh.
Was it written by machine learning?
Yeah, no.
No more do you need an infinite number of monkeys.
I was going to say something about the typewriters and the monkeys. For much of his life, William Shakespeare was the house playwright for an acting company called the King's Men that performed his plays
in the Globe.
On the banks of the River Thames in London. When Shakespeare died in 1616, the company needed a replacement and turned to one of the most prolific famous playwrights of all time, a man named John Fletcher. Fletcher, get him.
You have to say it with disdain.
Fletcher. Yeah, Fletcher's fame was quelled, but in 1850, a literary analyst named James Spedding noticed a remarkable similarity between Fletcher's plays and passages in Shakespeare's Henry VIII. Spedding concluded that Fletcher and Shakespeare must have collaborated on the play.
Oh, so no, you take this paragraph.
I'm scrolled a little bit too far. So evidence comes from studies of each of the author's linguistic idiosyncrasies and how they crop up on Henry VIII. For example, Fletcher often writes ye instead of you and instead of them. He also tended to add the word sir or still, or next. Okay, I'm trying to, I guess, just adding those words to a standard pentameter line to pentameter. Whatever.
Oh, stop. You're killing me.
line to create a extra sixth syllable.
Is that what so that fifth element that we just talked
yeah.
about?
We all saw that movie.
The sixth syllable? yeah. I'm going to name right. my next movie that. That'd be a great band name, The Sixth Syllable.
Anyway, so the characteristics allowed Spedding and other analysts to suggest that Fletcher must have been involved, but exactly how the play was divided is highly disputed. And other critics have suggested that another English dramatist, Philip Messinger, was actually Shakespeare's co-author. Anyway, if you go down, you can see they analyzed the wording. There's a graph there where they got an algorithm that actually learned the styles in terms that were most commonly used, and you can see how they kind of broke it out. And I would assume they would kind of work together at some point, right?
They must have studied a lot of works by both authors and then said, hey, let's take a look at Henry VIII and what? How do they know this was collaborative and not just influenced?
Yeah, that was the other thing I was thinking of is what if they were read or, you know, were around the same literatures or close to it and they were just influenced by those? So I don't know.
We then ran the machine learning over Podcasting for Dummies to determine what parts T. Morris wrote, what parts Chuck Tomasi wrote, and what are holdovers from Evoterra.
And it eventually broke the machine learning algorithm.
The machine learning algorithm then wanted to start a podcast, putting all three of those authors out of business.
Yeah. So feel free to go check out the rest of that article, and they go in a little more depth about how they were examining this stuff. And it's kind of interesting. Yeah, I think machine learning has a good place in this world for things like this, you know, analyzing stuff that are looking for patterns that we wouldn't necessarily see ourselves.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty good.
Taking over mundane work that, you know, that a machine could do much quicker and probably more reliably.
Get me a beer.
Freeing up the people who used to do the work to do more valuable work that you pay them for. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Why don't we have some machine learning stuff at work?
We do have machine learning stuff at work.
Yeah.
I am this close, Craig, this close to using it for on this day in history, because our machine learning at work requests that you have about 30,000 records to use as a pattern.
Yeah, you need a big data set. Yep.
I have gone through about 30,000 records now of birthdays and events, and I want to see what if it's smart enough to detect where I say use this in the show or don't use this in the show.
You know, you can download Wikipedia.
Why would I want to do that?
No, it's available.
No,
you can download.
But see, our machine learning is based on what you've done in the past to determine what you're going to do in the future. So I have 30,000 records over the last, what's it been, almost 3 years since I wrote that app?
Yeah.
That's
a lot. Have you gone through that many, really?
Yes. Yes, I have. It's hundreds. Every show I go through hundreds of records to bring you that silly little segment. And
yeah, I want to see that.
I thought I showed you that app.
Yeah, there was a time before ubiquitous internet, you know, when I had as a matter of fact, do I have it right here? Where's it at? I had I think it's behind me. I got a Nokia N810. I don't know if you ever saw that. It's a little handheld device. It's from Wi-Fi. And Wi-Fi only. There, later on, they came out with one that had, not 4G, had a mobile thing. Anyway, so I wanted to carry around Wikipedia and be able to search it. Well, there it was. You could download it. And there was an app that you could install on it. It was because it ran Linux. You install this app and it would allow you to access the database that you downloaded. And it was kind of neat, but it wasn't as easy as now. You can just, hey, Google, you know, and start. Oh, wait. Shut up.
Yeah. Nice going. You just triggered some listeners too.
Yeah. You know, where you say, hey, G, you know, and ask the question. Now it just spits it out. I can do that in my car driving down the road.
Yep.
You know, before I'd be like trying to type it out. And yeah, anyway, it was kind of neat to be able to download it and kind of look at the data. I was just saying you could feed the machine learning thing. It probably becomes self-aware and start. It just read all of Wikipedia and became self-aware. We're in trouble. Anyway.
All right. That brings us to the end of the show.
I don't know where I was going with that. I was wondering too.
We've got our question of the week. So our question this week is, what is the most, quote, glitch in the matrix experience you've ever had? Have you ever gone, that made no sense. It must be a glitch in the matrix. And you can't say your kids either. that doesn't count.
That's right.
They're not a glitch in the matrix. Don't call them that. They might resent you later.
So, yeah, I was walking down the hallway and I saw a cat. Then I saw another cat. Then I saw another cat. I realized, I just have six cats. I just have six cats.
Right.
Yeah.
And you went, whoa.
Yeah. Whoa.
Then I had to call the telephone and I got sucked out the matrix. All right. That brings us to, I think that's, yes, the end of the show song. Thank you once again for joining us on Technorama, watching or listening. We appreciate it very much, especially thanks to our patrons. You can get that patronage over at patreon.com/technoramapodcast. You can call us. It's still, according to my watch, it's still November, and you can call us. So if you're listening to this like months from now, call us, because for me, it's still November.
It's International Technorama Voicemail Month. November is
707. Just remember, like the old airplane, the 707. 530. That's the only hard part. 530. 2428. That spells chat if you have letters on your phone. Not the rotary kind. Come on. Use your
Not the rotary.
707-530-2428 is how you can get a hold of us, or send us an email, technorama@checkchat.com, and we'll read it for you. Until next time, give us a big binary high five, Craig.
101.
Oh, the music.
Call everybody. I mean, bye, everybody.
Bye. Okay.